August 3rd, 2019 session TeamSpeak for OpenHBSDR. My name is Dave, K0S. I've been working on a couple things, mostly very basic, going through and reading about ways of communicating between separate programs that will be useful for both HBSDR programmer and for the Tangerine software we're working on. I'm trying to get a better understanding about how different pieces work. Next on the list is Greg, ZL3IX, shown as mic muted. Next is Henry, PA0HJA, shown as recording away. And then we have Mike, AA8K, shown as recording and mic muted. And we thank Mike for posting the TeamSpeak session recording to teamspeakarchive.opensdr.org. Then we have Phil, VK6PH. Go ahead, Phil.
Thanks, sir, Dave. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, all. Very nice to be back from an absolutely fantastic vacation. I had a couple of weeks sailing a yacht around the Greek islands, which was a completely new experience and another item off the bucket list. And I haven't been ocean sailing before or sailed the yacht before, so that was an incredible experience. But everything worked out really well. The weather was fantastic. We have wind every day to run under sail for the times we needed to sail, so that was great. And then at the end of that, I spent a few days on the Isle of Rhodes, and a few days after that, Rick, you've got you're on transmit.
Yeah, I'll shut it down.
After that, I had a couple of days in Athens, and the highlight of Athens was going to the Acropolis Museum, which was absolutely magnificent, and built over the top of an old archaeological site, which I was fortunate enough that had been recently opened, so you could actually have walkways and walk over the site and remains of the buildings that they'd discovered there. And I think the highlight there for me was seeing Hermes, which is one of our founders. So that was a great experience. Radio-wise, not a lot. I'm recovering for the trip and getting back to work, but I am about to port the code that's in Hermes to the other boards, predominantly initially the Orion 2 board, just a common new board now, which covers the envelope tracking, envelope elimination, restoration, high performance linear amplifiers. There's a lot more work been going on in the last few months, and very, very successful results so far. But since folks can't buy the Hermes board anymore, they need other hardware in order to connect these new and high-efficient linear amplifiers. So I'll probably start on that during the week, and assuming we don't run into too many timing issues, hopefully there won't be too much of a project, so it'll be very pleased to start having the group working on those amplifiers. I think that's about it. I've still got an awful lot of emails to catch up on, but we'll get through those during the week. Back to you, Dave.
Fine business. Yes, we're happy to have you back. Next on the list is Bill, KD5TFD. Go ahead, Bill.
Hey, good day, all. Yeah, not short here. So not sort of definitely under under the crush at work, but thankfully that's going well. So that's good. And Phil, it sounds like you had a really neat vacation. See the old Greek stuff is pretty neat. Glad you enjoyed it. And back to you, Dave.
Well, fine business. And then next on the list we have Bob, VE3GKM, shown recording away, and Rick is back, so hopefully he's got his push-to-talk working. I've been on other TeamSpeak sessions, and there seems to be, if you have it on Vox, it just picks up everybody all at once. You get a horrible echo. Go ahead, Rick.
Good evening, everybody. Sorry about that. New computer here, new setup. I just loaded in TeamSpeak about 10 minutes ago and forgot to configure the push-to-talk. How's my audio, Dave?
Just fine.
Oh, great. Yeah, I don't have too much to report. Haven't been doing too much radio stuff in the last few months, and it's been a while since I've been here, so I'll just listen into the discussion.
Well, fine business. So, that bringing us to the end of the list, we're open for general discussion.
So, Rick, is your new computer Mac, Linux, or PC?
It's a Mac.
Laptop type or desktop type thing?
No, it's a laptop. It's a MacBook Pro, just one of the i5 ones. Yeah, it's got a nice screen on it though. I picked it up off of our local swap thing, Kijiji thing, where somebody had won it in a charity auction and didn't know what to do with it. So I got a pretty good deal for a brand new computer.
Well, that's a neat way to come across something like that. Good deal.
Yeah. Once in a while, you get lucky. I was looking for a new laptop for myself anyways, and just happened across it. So that's great.
Well, Bill, you gave me some more things to read about and learn about, so I started looking at some of the web research.
Oh, the CongRPC?
Yes.
Yeah, that might be overkill. Are you doing, you're doing communications among same thing, stuff on the same box?
Yeah, generally. And then, of course, Scotty wants to throw an FPGA in the...
Nice thing. Well, yeah, the gRPC is probably more overkill then, but that's what we're ending up using for stuff in our stuff. But our stuff runs in three different data centers, so they're all remote from each other for reliability.
Well, the architecture we're settling, much like OpenHPSDR, but there's sort of a data engine and then a variety of additional boards that can be plugged in and need some way of discovering that they're there and then communicating with them.
No, these aren't full-fledged computers, though. These FPGA things, right?
Yeah, it could be I2C. It could be UART or serial. It could be full UDP or TCP. So you don't, at this point, a little too open. But I figured I'd play with UDP and serial. And then as other things came along, we'd try to figure them out.
Yeah, it sounds like your requirements are still in the foggy nebula stage.
Oh, this group is good at documentation. We've got six or eight outline documents going. The group has, they're all hams, but we have a couple of retired and several university professors.
Have you ever heard of the second system effect?
Oh, yes, I have.
You might be on a second system.
Yes, I'm well aware of that. It's an interesting problem if you don't make it too big. It could be of good use in lots of other places as well.
The thing I'm working on at work, a first generation system built on top of a old legacy system. And the thing that's supposed to be the real solution is the second generation system, which is built on all new infrastructure, no legacy in it whatsoever. And they're also showing great signs of being a second system. And I mentioned it to one of them, and they were absolutely defensive on, oh no, we're not a second system, blah blah, and so late, and they've got so many features in there they don't need.
Yep, it's one of those where you know enough to know that you could do it, but not enough to actually how to implement it immediately, and so more idea of time or effort. But it is a Tapper project. If you have any interest, look at tangerinesdr.com, and you can learn about what's going on. And their first functional project is personal space weather. And it seems like the two sensors that they're focusing on, one is a two-receiver coherent SDR radio. And the other one is a magnetometer, and they want to be able to time, so it has to probably talk to.
Nice thing. Well, yeah, there's actually more out here than the last time I looked, so that's cool.
What's the purpose of the magnetometer?
Well, the scientists are interested in magnetic variation. As you know, magnetic variation, space detected first by the fixed GPSs that were for differential correction, and they learned a lot about space weather and electric. It's essentially when a solar flare hits our magnetic bubble, it causes all kinds of disturbance. But they've found that there's more interaction between regular weather and this space weather than they previously thought. One example is there was a tsunami that came out of Japan headed toward North America, and they could detect tsunami waves were reproduced in the atmosphere and made variation in magnetic in the ionosphere, which is really fascinating.
Okay, so we're talking about variations in the Earth's magnetic.
Yes.
Okay, I've done quite a lot of work on that for underground navigation. Okay, I need to have a look at the Tangerine website. Thanks.
Yeah, they're more interested in, you know, one of the things is they have a set of academic sensors that are very good, but numbers are in 10. And what they like to do is make a cheap little sensor that ham radio operators turn on and report and kind of fill in background of information.
Okay. I mean, magnetic sensors connected to a Arduino or a Raspberry Pi or something, and then sent over the internet would be very, very easy to do. And there's lots of PC, you know, very cheap PCBs with magnetometers on them available now that meet that sort of application.
Yeah, they want a very sensitive magnetometer, but it's not terribly expensive. The one they've settled on is about $20 for the sensor itself. It does need to be away from the house so that you aren't just picking up your electrical network in your house. But it is pretty interesting. I don't know if you've seen the recordings from Friedrichshafen, but there were a number of very interesting related things using the Kiwi SDR network to pick up variation. There was another guy who used some of that to do distance estimation and compare it to the, since all the station reported GPS, all the receiving stations are reported with a GPS. Those are really, so I'd take a look at some of the videos that are on the Tangerine SDR site, and it's all from 2019. It's quite a lot of.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. I did look at the Friedrichshafen videos, which is very, very good quality and very well done. Thanks for that. And I did follow those ones. Yeah, very interesting. Yeah, I understand the work I've been doing on magnetometers underground, and we found for calibration purposes, we actually had to dig a 30-foot hole and drop the devices down the hole so you could actually calibrate them.
I understand. My father was a geologist that worked in a below-ground mine. It's interesting, some of his stories. I was also thinking back to your chirp work is probably relevant to what we've been talking about.
Okay, well, it's low-rise seems to have taken that to a pretty good commercial stage.
Yep, yep.
I did see the Joe Taylor video on the modifications they made to FT8 to overcome the side bends generated when they used FSK. Quite a lot of our users were mentioning how broad the spectrum appeared to be on the transmit signal. In fact, the band scope was showing a lot of side bands on the transmit signal, and they were concerned about the width of their transmitter. And it turns out that the actual ParisDR was actually showing exactly what was happening because they were transitioning instantly between the various frequencies of the JT8 code, and they've now gone to a Gaussian transition between frequencies, which is greatly reduced the sidebands.
Oh, that's great. It's always interesting what you think is going on, and then getting some hardware and software really looking and going, oh, there's something else going on here too.
Well, it's certainly, I know quite a few people emailed me and said, oh, there's a problem when I run this code because the transmit signal's not clean, and I couldn't see any problem, but I didn't have time to look at it any further. But it turns out we were actually reporting exactly what was going on.
Well, he gave a talk at Friedrichshafen, the contesting session. I'm not aware if his talks were recorded, but they didn't show up in the SDR session.
Okay, I'm trying to think where I saw the video. I may have a link here somewhere.
The one, he did come to the SDR session, said hello and thank you for all your work and that kind of stuff, but then he was getting ready to run off to another session.
Okay, I think it was a link, yes, I'm pretty sure it was, I found it in the Friedrichshafen. I think he made a comment about a link, there was a link in there to another session, which contained quite a detailed description of the various both signal modes he developed, and it did go through. He actually had spectrum displays of FSK and then Gaussian FSK. So that's where I saw it. Yep.
Well, I'll go look that up. And hopefully, add a link to our website because it's relevant.
Yep. absolutely. It's interesting. I had the same problem when I produced the Chirp 2-meter beacon that when we first put it on the air at low power. It was pretty obvious that there was as the sweep returned and started again, there was quite a lot of sidebands generated, and I actually modulated the envelope, the signal, with a raised cosine, so that as it came to the end of its sweep and started a new one, the envelope went down to zero and started up again, and that got rid of the sideband. So I sympathise with their problem.